Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us in another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and as always, I will be your host for today's show. With me today is Andy Mulligan. How are you today, Andy?
I'm very good, thanks, Miro. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
It's absolutely my pleasure, and we're very excited to have you on the podcast today as our guest. And of course, for those listening, Andy is a leading international brand and business consultant and is acknowledged as an expert of all areas of brand development. He advises CEOs and senior management teams on strategies for developing and exploiting brands and growing their business. Andy's latest book, On Purpose, written with his regular co-author, Sean Smith, is a practical guide to executing business purpose successfully by delivering a branded customer experience people love. And we're very happy to have him on the podcast today to talk about the books, the themes and ideas behind it. But before we get into all of that, Andy, my first question for you is one I ask every author that comes on the podcast, and that's what actually inspired you to start writing?
Well, I've always loved words, and I've always loved writing ever since I was a child. And I studied English at university, so it's always been a great interest. I mean, the word passion is terribly overused, but I think with things like words and literature, it's probably okay to use them. So that's always been the a motivation for me in writing. And particularly with business writing, the thing that inspired me there was the opportunity it gave me to share the stories that I felt were important for people to know, particularly people who were running businesses, who might be thinking of running businesses, to know about what I would describe as the best way to run businesses. So having the opportunity to write books, and I've now done quite a few, I think, is a fulfillment of a long-held ambition to write and also desire to share the stories that I think are interesting and would other people would find interesting and useful.
Great. And let's focus on the book, On Purpose. Now, as I was reading through the book, and here it is in front of me, what really stuck out was this idea of purpose. And it seems to be something that is really up and coming in all areas of business. You know, what is a business's purpose? How does it correlate in regards to their audience, to their customers, to the people within the business? So can you perhaps tell us a bit about what was the driving force behind On Purpose, and how did the book actually come into fruition?
Well, Sean Smith, who's my co-author on this book and has co-authored two other books with me too, and I had written a book called Bold, How to Be Brave in Business and Win, which was published around 2011, 2012, and was very successful. And one of the things that we really understood by writing that book was how driven each of the organizations we looked at in Bold were with a higher ambition. And they didn't just have a higher ambition, they actually did something about it. They were, you know, they were intent on putting it into action. And we had heard a lot about the word purpose over time, and it seemed to us that purpose was being somewhat misused. Maybe that's unfair. Mostly to refer to marketing activities that would portray an organization as the good guys, usually some form of glorified CSR, really.
Right.
And that struck us as not really being what purpose was about. What we thought purpose was about was having at the heart of your business a clear idea of what you were there to do that would add value to your customers and the world in which they lived. And that seemed to us what true purpose was. And so we thought, right, well, why don't we write a book that's about purpose? And not only is it a book on purpose, but it's a book about those companies who not only have purpose, but then act on purpose. And that twin meaning of on purpose, i.e. having one, and secondly, doing what you should do against that purpose or in fulfillment of that purpose, seemed to be us to be an important book to write. And that's how it came about. And we researched a number of companies who fulfilled three main criteria, which was A, they had a reputation for having a strong brand story in which there was clarity about why they were here, that they had strong customer franchise, and they also had a reputation for having strong employee franchise or strong culture. And of course, they had to be companies that were successful. And out of those, we identified a few who we felt covered the waterfront. We had a company that would be business to business, company that would be business consumer, big companies, small companies, not-for-profits. We cover the waterfront in terms of organizations to show it didn't really matter what size you were, what category you were in, having a purpose and delivering against it was critical to success, both in terms of commercial success, but also just in terms of very important, I would call it happiness for your people and for yourself, doing the right thing.
Yeah, and of course, and as I often say, happiness, I think, is not so much something that we strive for, it is a state that we're in. And I think that very much feeds into the idea of purpose. And I really want to talk about some of the ideas in the book, because it is described as a very practical guide that people can use. But before that, there was something that you said there, which I find very interesting, and that's the idea of what is purpose and what is the wrong kind of purpose. So can you perhaps tell us a bit about the dangers and perhaps the pitfalls that companies can get into with the wrong kind of purpose, and more importantly, how can they actually clear away from them? How can they stay as far away as possible?
Well, you know, I think there are quite a few wrong kinds of purpose, and we cover some of them in the book. The most obvious wrong kind of purpose, as far as we're concerned, is where you make profit your primary purpose. And I think a lot of organizations go wrong because they are chasing a growth which is really about trying to return revenue, dividends, whatever it might be, but mostly a financial return to a remote shareholder. I may be wrong, but I think some of the collapses that we've seen recently are really down to those organizations not being led by a strong, outwardly focused customer purpose, and more about a race for growth to prove to the city or to shareholders that they had a plan for financial growth, the economic growth. So we always say purpose before profit. And I think if you go into business just saying, I'm here to make a load of money, I don't think that is the right kind of purpose for sustainable business, or to make your all your stakeholders happy.
And it needs to be also very sort of short-term sighted as well. If you're, you know, chasing a profit and that's all you're interested in, eventually, you know, what then? What happens after?
Yeah, so you just and carry on trying to get more
profit.
It
seems to be, like you said, it seems to be a lot of examples of these. And just from the top of my head, I've been thinking a lot about them without naming names, obviously. This idea of chasing, you know, profits and pleasing shareholders and people who are not necessarily involved in the company seems to be a very big problem.
I think it is. I mean, it's very easy, of course, to say this, and there will be a lot of CEOs of you know, major organizations who will say, "Well, you don't know how difficult it is. I've got to, you know, I've got to get in front of the analysts. I've got to get in front of the. I've got to report to the city every quarter." You know, but I think that's a cop out. Actually, I think there are very, very good companies who are publicly quoted companies that are led by people and have at their heart an ethos, a purpose that drives them, which is beyond just returning a buck for the next quarter. And I think, you know, there is so much evidence that shows those companies who are motivated by a higher purpose than simply chasing the buck tend to be the ones who perform better over the long run, and that's been going on, or that has been identified for many years. It started, I think, really with Jim Collins' book, you know, Good to Great, and books Good to Great and Built to Last were the first ones to sort of indicate that that's what kept great companies going. So the first one, I think, is wrong sense of purpose is to be focused too much on the short term financial measures. The second one is, I think, more common, which is it's a bland and self-serving purpose, which is usually articulated along the lines of, we aim to be the number one in, you know, whatever sector, delivering whatever to whomever. You know, you must have seen these things all the time.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere. They're bland, they're generic, and they are clearly an exercise in tick boxing around a purpose. And they don't engage anybody. They don't really engage, and they certainly don't really direct people towards what they need to do. So I think those are common and absolutely unmotivating purposes. There's another kind of purpose, and it's part of a story we tell in here. I don't know if I can use bad language on the radio.
No, but, please go for it.
But there's a wonderful little story that my colleague Sean tells, and we tell it in the book, where he was with a Japanese company, and they were talking about their purpose, and they used a Japanese phrase with two Japanese symbols around, and he saw it and he asked, what does that symbol mean? And they said, that's our purpose. And he said, what is it? It says fuck Fuji. And that was
right.
So I think, you know, killing your competitor is, you know, a purpose. It's but it's not a particularly helpful purpose to anybody, really.
No.
And I think that whole kind of macho set approach to business, where there's got to be a winner and there's got to be seen to be a loser, and we're in it to be the winner.
We need to crush anyone in our way.
And we need to. And the way that people use military metaphor and talk about business as if it's a game of war or like it's a war, I mean, I find it A, disturbing, B, ludicrous. You know, war is a really horrible, terribly serious thing, and at the end of a day in a war, people are killed. At the end of a day in business, not so.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think purposes that are built around that sense of, we're going to go and crush them competitive, they want to be number... Again, I don't feel they're particularly motivating or good. And the other ones are those purposes which are, I would call, the greenwash purposes, the CSR on steroids type purpose, where, you know, there's a general statement of, we want to help our planet or do good to the world. And it's not actually grounded in the reality of the organization. It's really done to make people feel that they are putting, I think, a sort of green, yeah, I could say a green wash across the business. I call them rather false purposes. If you want to avoid it, it's a very simple way of avoiding it, and that is to understand what is a good purpose. And a good purpose, very simply, connects a story about what you do that improves your customer, consumer, or client life and the world in which they live, which is congruent with what you as a business are actually capable of doing. And I think that is the way to avoid going to the bad purposes, is to focus on what's the value we bring to people and how do we help solve the problems in their lives that we have the legitimacy and capability to solve. So one of the examples we give in the book is Nissan. And Nissan, as an automotive company, has a higher purpose around creating a zero emission, zero fatalities world. Well, zero emission is a big issue that they can deal with, because what that translates into a customer benefit is air quality. And that is what automotive companies mostly can do to affect and improve the quality of the world in which the customers live, is air quality, which is why Nissan are spending an awful lot of money investing in electric vehicles. But the proposition that's built into that, how they're going to reach that sense of create that zero emissions world, is by offering their customers innovative and exciting products that are affordable and accessible. So they're democratizing the access to technologies that in the past might only have been in sort of more upmarket car brands. And that, I think, is an example of an organization thinking about a purpose that they can actually do something about, they can build their entire business around, and is congruent with what they do and actually is relevant and appealing and makes a difference to the world. And I think the way to avoid bad purposes is not to think about how to avoid them, it's to just actually concentrate on creating a really good one.
That's very interesting, because the message that I often try to live up to myself is it's a very simple one, in that instead of trying to, in a way, improve the world and bestow your would-be virtues and all of your skills and abilities, it would be better to try and, first of all, improve yourself and, in a way, set yourself in order. And I think if a company focuses on doing that, and that's a great case study example with Nissan, where they say, you know, this is what we can do realistically.
Yes.
This is how we can do it. And then in the long term, our investment can pay off for the people that are our customers, for our environment, and everything that comes with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very important point there. And that's the point of communication.
Yes.
Because I think it's absolutely integral, both within the business and, of course, outside of the business, in terms of interacting and branding.
Yeah.
Now, how can partners convey their message and their purpose with good communication to those groups?
Well, I think there's a fundamental thing first, almost before we get to communication. Or perhaps, Mauro, it's more that nowadays the sort of media and the message are almost kind of one and the same, i.e. that what you do is communicating much more powerfully than your own communications. And by that I mean, if you create something of value for your customers, you deliver them a great product, great service, that speaks volumes. And what happens then is your customers, your consumers start talking about that for you. And that infectious communication that comes from delivering something of value is, I think, almost where the communication has to start, i.e. you have to start from, well, let's do something that we can talk about, rather than, and in fact, let's do something that other people will want to talk about. Let's create something remarkable in the true sense of its word, which will do communication for us. One of our clients used to, at O2 used to have a phrase, "Don't tell me you're funny, tell me a joke." And I think at the heart of that is the communication challenge for many companies.
Yes, absolutely.
Is they're far happier sometimes, and it goes back to the problem with purpose, which is it's too often a communication exercise rather than a customer experience discipline, that they want to talk about wonderful things, they want to talk about, but yeah, okay, but what are you actually doing? So I think it's in a sense, the first thing to start off is, let's create something remarkable, and they'll get remarked. All right, we're going to remarked on. Then, and this is why we call the book Branded Customer Experience, you do have to make sure that that is surrounded with your branding, and particularly your tone of voice. And I think the other key part of being purposeful, it's not only in the delivery of the experience, but in the way you use your own brand language to engage people in the conversation with the tone of voice. So, Innocent, of course, have long been the past masters of this, but I think increasingly you now see businesses wrapping up what they offer in a look and a feel and a language that exponentially communicates what they want to do. And the tone of voice, I guess, then is a starting point in perhaps to the question you're first asking about, well, how do you go about talking to various audiences? There's generally, I still think, three broad things you need to do. One is your message first must be communicated relentlessly inside the organization. And I think increasingly for a chief executive or for anybody in the C-suite and for anybody who's going to be a leader, you have to become a good storyteller. And you have to understand that your job is in fact often just being relentless in communicating in the right tone, in the language of your brand, the priorities, the purpose, the focus on the few things that really, really, really matter to people. The second part of internal communication, and you can do that in all kinds of ways, of course. There are town hall meetings you can do. There are, you know, there's the daily blog you can do from the CEO's office. There's the walking around, which is most important, the walking around the business and just having conversations with people and patting them on the back for doing a great job, which is in line with the purpose, and calling people out because you've heard that great story and sharing a story from one part of the organization with them. You know, there's a lot of that socializing that good leaders do, and poorer leaders don't do. I think poor leaders tend to restrict their communications to extremely formal channels. And you might be lucky if you get, you know, one speech every 6 months from them, and you know, you might get a little bit of writing in the front of the corporate brochure or in the front of an employee manual. Sort of relentless communication from a leader is important. And then the second thing is using new technologies, using internal communication technologies, whether it be a Yammer or a Slack or a, you know, an intranet or a app or whatever, you know, or a Snapchat, Pentagram, God knows what they are. All these opportunities are ways of engaging people internally and story sharing. And I think that is another key part of the communication. And then you need to provide the freedom for your own people to share their stories externally with customers, and encourage dialogue and conversation between your employees and customers. And I think there are some good examples in the book of companies who are very good at allowing the frontline employees in particular to engage in conversations off script, doesn't matter what you talk about, because we know you will be talking in the right manner and you'll be talking about the right things that matter to our customers. I think Timpson, the keychain, the Keysmiths, is a great example of that. So it's probably a very long answer to what you were probably hoping was going to be a relatively short response to your question about communication. It starts with, let's do something that people want to remark on. That's going to be the most important way of communicating. It's then about relentless communication as a leader inside in every possible way, using technologies to accelerate that, and empowering conversations, open conversations between your own people and customers. And then traditional communicate, you know, marketing communications tend to take care of themselves. There's lots of really good professionals in that who can create great advertising campaigns and social media campaigns and God knows what else. You know, that's, I think, the less of the challenge. The bigger challenge is understanding your job nowadays is to constantly tell stories.
Yeah, and there's something there, the idea of technology, and I like to focus that for a bit, because I simply feel that, especially in today's constantly moving world, we are absolutely bombarded by content, we are bombarded by messages, we are bombarded by whether it's entertainment, politics, content, you know, whatever it might be, and it is noise, and it can become white noise, which I think then it turns people off. Mm. Can you perhaps give us an insight on how technology itself can help us achieve this true branded customer experience? Perhaps if there was a particular company or a case study that you really thought clicked in a way with technology?
Well, I think you've identified the problem with technology is most of us are focusing on technology as a communications tool to bash out more messages for people, whether it be, you know, Facebook messages or the worst thing that's happening at the moment, I think, that is really seriously pissing loads of people off, and forgive my language again, is how almost every time you have any form of interaction with almost any kind of company now, within 2 seconds, you're going to ping on your mobile phone asking you to rate out of 10 or 5 what your experience is like.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, the wrong use of technology. Where technology works really well is in the thoughtful application of it to enhance or to make easier, just if people could use that more than anything else, easier the experience people want to have of you. So there's a couple of good examples in the book. Hotels are getting a little bit better on this, but Citizen M, which is one of the companies we feature in there, which is a rather interesting hybrid chic hotel, with the, it's in Amsterdam, it's in London, it's in New York. Even Premier Inn, who we also feature, are moving towards technologies that make the experience really easy for you. So you don't have to check in by standing at a desk waiting to get your key. You can just check in using online portals in the reception lobby. Or the technology is such now you can get a key directly to your app, to an app on your phone, and you can use that phone to open your door. So you have removed one of the barriers to the experience. And God, people want to talk about that. And then, of course, you make that, of course, shareable. But so the great thing about tech, you know, you have these experiences, and because it's happening either through your phone, you're usually one click away from then sharing that via whatever is your preferred social media. So technology that actually is there to enhance or to make much easier the experience is the technology we should be focusing on. And unfortunately, if you ask a lot of companies, what the, you know, and you talk to them about digital, if you talk to them about digital, a lot of big companies, and talk about a digital journey, they will mostly be focusing on how we get the people onto our website and how we might be able to transact a process through on the website, you know?
Yeah.
It's not really got much beyond that. The technologies we were talking about earlier, about using internal communications technologies to, fantastic, cheap, basically free ways of helping an organization understand what it should focus on. There's a great company called HomeServe, which is a domestic emergency insurance business. Wouldn't think this would be in a particularly exciting area, but blimey, the people who work for that company are really motivated and inspired about the work they go out to do to solve problems for people. And they use Yammer in a really imaginative way, encouraging people on the front line to come and tell their stories about what they fixed. And that gets shared, etc. So, you know, use technology to enhance and make easier people's lives. And that's really the most important thing to think about with technology. If it isn't going to help you solve a customer problem, why would you even bother with it? And I think that's the trick with technology, if that makes sense.
Yeah, agreed on that. And in order for us to put everything that we've talked into perspective, and going back to the book itself, it is described as a practical guide to executing business purpose. Now, to go to my penultimate question, Andy, it would be, can you perhaps share with us three tips for the business owners and managers listening to this podcast on how they can start finding out their purpose, you know, tomorrow morning as they walk into the office? What can they do to get this process underway? Other than getting the book, of course.
Well, that would be a very good start, of course, to get the book. I think if it's three tips, I think if you don't already do this as a leader, tomorrow, instead of going to your office, go to the place where people buy your products or your services, or go and visit your clients, and do nothing else than observe, chat, speak. Don't seek to sell to them, but just observe, even perhaps try and buy your own service yourself. Walk in your customer's shoes. Be endlessly fascinated with your customers is the first thing you can do. And that does two things. That simple task of being the first thing I'm going to do today is I'm going to go and I'm either going to speak to a client, or I'm going to visit a customer, or I'm going to go and down to the shops which sell my my products, whatever it might be. I think it does two things. It reconnects you with the your basic purpose. Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing anyway? Why have I visited these people? What possible difference am I making to their lives? And second, it gives you a real visceral feel for what people experience, the pain and the pleasure. That helps hardwire you when you go back into the organization to think about where we've got to change or improve things, or why people are really buying us and how that connects into the difference we make. So number one, get out and go about there. Two, walk around and ask people, convene or start organizing focus groups internally, mini groups, surveys, whatever you want to do, about what it is that inspires people to be in your organization. Simplest question you can ask anybody to get a sense towards what your purpose is, if you don't already know it, is what makes you proud to work here? And the more you ask that question, and the more you listen, you're going to get a sense of what is it that is really behind what we do that inspires people. And for some people, they will put that into the context of a bigger thing we're doing in the world. I'm inspired because I think we're going to help the world create zero emissions. For other people, it will be, I think we just do a wonderful job for our clients. We make our clients happy. We make our customers happy, or we create. And actually, one of the things about purpose is it doesn't have to be solving the world's problems. As you said earlier, it can just be being true to your word. And that would make a lot of customers happy. You know, the best business ethic is do right by your customers. And if you did that more often, that would unlock your sense of purpose. Ask yourself, and that's the third thing to do, just ask yourself a simple question. What am I doing that is doing right by my customers? And are we doing that in the right way, every way? And I think that's a starting point to looking at your purpose. The thing that goes beyond that, and what is even more practically, which is you then have to start actually looking at where in the journey our customers have with us, are we creating value for them? And are we dramatically differentiating ourselves at those moments where we are creating value for them? Because that's where, again, we're going to be able not only to unlock our purpose, but going to be showing how we are being purposeful in producing stuff for our customers. And a lot of companies talk about doing customer journeys, but they're very, very rarely do they make choices, hard choices about what they're going to do to make a difference. And I think, again, a CEO should be thinking tomorrow about, right, where are the, what, I need to work out what will make the biggest difference to my customers' happiness, either removing a big problem for them or absolutely dialing up something that we do that's wonderful for them, and then we'll put some real money and investment behind it. And I'll finish this bit off by just giving an example again from the book. I use the example of Premier Inn, who have a great purpose to give customers a great night's sleep guaranteed. It's a guaranteed driven business model, which means they absolutely have to do it, otherwise they give money back. And that is a real hardwired purpose. But there was a conversation going on about, well, what gives people a good night's sleep? Well, obviously the bed is a huge amount of investment in the Premier Inn bed. It's the sort of centerpiece of many of the communications. Back to the point we were talking about earlier, create something remarkable. I've got the bed. It's a 6-star bed in a budget hotel. That becomes the centerpiece of my communications because it's remarkable, it's experience, and it gets talked about. But there was another conversation going on about air conditioning, and air conditioning does interfere with a great night's sleep. And there was a workshop in which Sean was running, we talk about it in the book, where the board were talking about, right, what else do we need to do to keep this great night guarantee? And up again came the list of complaints, air conditioning. Why haven't we dealt with the air conditioning problem? Chief Financial Officer says, well, we keep talking about this every year. It's such a big capital expenditure. We always knock it back to the next year. And the CEO said, do you know what? We just got to do this. It's our purpose.
Just do it, yeah.
Let's put the money into it. And that's the final thing that people could start doing. Maybe not tomorrow. They need to do a bit of research first. But they probably know instinctively where they should be putting the money in the business to show that they're a purposeful company. And that's, I guess, some of the practical things that they could do.
Yeah, and there's a lot to think about. And of course, as you say, you know, these things take time, and of course, they take effort and a lot of the time courage to be able to say, well, we need to be investing into something, and that's for a reason, and we need to fulfill, in this case, a purpose. And it's not an easy decision. It's not a cheap decision. But if this is what we're trying to do, you know, as I say, you have to get your cross and bear it, if that's a horrible way to put it. But at the same time, it is what you have to do, is choose your sacrifice in a way, and then take responsibility for your actions.
Yes, and very few people like the idea of sacrifice. That a lot of people in business don't like the idea of putting their money where their mouth is. They like to hedge bets rather than put it all on red. But you raise a very good point, and And actually, I think this is one of the great benefits of purpose for a business, is it streamlines and it accelerates decision making. So you could spend another whole year doing a business case. You could, you know, work out how many air conditioning units would have to be removed and put into how many unit, you know, in how many places up in another country, blah, 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 and it would cost this much, and you know what the return would be, blah, blah. Or you can just say, we've got a purpose of having a great night's sleep. We know poor air conditioning disrupts a great night's sleep. We're going to change the air conditioning.
Yeah.
So purpose is a great for accelerating decision making. And I think for many people in business, I think particularly the clients that we work with, their frustration is often the slowness to act. The indecisiveness is almost the biggest fear. Having the ability to just say, right, we're going to take a decision. And this is the decision we take. You know, there will always be some easy to make business case for most of them. But being able to make that quickly and know why you're doing it, justifying it because this is our purpose, is, I think, tremendously liberating for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think once you take the plunge and you do it a few times, you actually realise, you know, this is how things work. You know, this is what really sets you free in a way.
Absolutely.
And let's wrap up today's podcast with the question I ask anyone, actually, that comes on as a guest, Andy, and that's, what are you actually currently reading?
Right. So, I said at the beginning that you know, I've always loved words and writing, and I'm an English student, so I always encourage people, yes, please read some business books, including the one that we've got there, but to read fiction and just be widely read. So I have a few books on the go at the moment, I'm reading one of my favourite authors, who's John le Carré, his latest book, which is called The Legacy of Spies. And I was thinking, if you read good writers, then you will become a better writer and a better communicator yourself. And in business, that's important. So yes, it's important to pick up business books and learn, but actually it's often very important to go back and read really good writers and see how they write, see how they craft words, see how they choose words. So that you can put that into your own writing. And I picked up a little book which I thought was quite fun. It was sent to me, which is a business book. It's called Bigger Than This by a guy called Fabian Geiralter, which is how to turn any venture into an admired brand. And I quite like this because, as you can see, well, your listeners won't be able to see, it's one of those books that has the it's the art of brevity.
Yeah, I can see that.
And
absolutely.
It's a big text and quite fun to read. So it's good to have a couple of things on the go, I think. But I always encourage people, whatever it is, read and read good writers, fiction writers, good biography writers, because reading good writing helps you to become a better writer, helps you to become a better communicator.
Great advice there. And of course, for those listening, although you can't see the book, there will be links in the description below. You can go, you can find out more about the books that we talked about, and of course, on purpose. And with that, I would like to thank you very much, Andy, for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Many thanks, Myra.
And of course, to our listeners, we would like to thank you very much for joining us once again on this week's episode of Lid Radio. You can always find us on social media channels, your usual favorites, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. If you know it, we're on it at Lid Radio. And once again, we look forward to seeing you next week on the show.